This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Ari Shapiro. Since we started this program 10 weeks ago, a lot has changed. Scientists know much more about COVID-19, but there's still a lot that we don't know, like why some patients respond to the disease differently and how long the coronavirus will be with us. Dr. Megan Ranney is an emergency physician at Brown University and Lifespan Health Systems in Rhode Island, and she's here to answer your questions about what we do and don't know about the coronavirus right now. Thanks for joining us again, Dr. Ranney.
Thank you, Ari. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, it's been 2 months since you first talked to us on this program. So to begin with, I'm just curious, so much has changed since then. What are you seeing in your area?
Yeah, 2 months feels like so long and yet so little time. Here in Rhode Island, we are seeing the number of new cases plateau, but we are still seeing a lot of really sick patients. Our hospital is certainly open for business. And again, we're not seeing those huge waves of patients that we saw a couple of months ago, but it is still amongst us. And we are still having patients come in who are very, very ill.
Okay, so some good news, but not out of the woods yet. Let's get to these listener questions, starting with Peter in Connecticut.
There's uncertainty whether recovery from COVID-19 leads to immunity. And if it does, what sort of immunity? Can't conclusions be drawn from the people who've already recovered from COVID-19?
So whether COVID-19 recovery leads to immunity, is that something that scientists do or don't know?
We both do and don't. We certainly are studying. I know, right? This is going to be my answer for a lot of things, I think.
Okay.
But we're studying people that have recovered, and we find that they have antibodies, and they seem to be resistant to getting infected again. But we don't know how long that lasts, right? We don't know if this is going to be like the common cold, where you have immunity for a month or two, or if it's going to be like something like measles or smallpox, where you get immunity for years or for your entire lifetime.
Okay. Our next listener question is about a vaccine. This is from Nicole in Dallas, Texas.
My question is about the admittedly optimistic vaccine timeline. We've been hearing 12 to 18 months for 5 or 6 months. So my question is whether that means 12 to 18 months from January, which means more like 12 months now, or are we talking about a year and a half from today?
That's a good point. 12 to 18 months has been the refrain for a while now. What is the timeline at this point?
So it all depends on a little bit of luck. It could be only 12 months from now. There have been a couple of really promising studies, one of which is now out in the scientific literature, which is progressing the way that vaccines work. There are various stages of trials, and those promising early trials are now leading to the next phase. So if those continue to show good results, we may have vaccines that are ready for distribution as early as this winter, which would be awesome. So January, 12 months from when we first started giving that estimate. But if anything goes wrong, if those vaccines aren't safe, or if they don't actually confer immunity, or if there are problems with manufacturing, we could be looking at much longer. So 12 months, December, January is an optimistic timeline, and we're all keeping our fingers crossed.
Okay, depends on a lot of variables then. Well, speaking of the vaccine, from the beginning of this program, we've been getting a lot of questions about whether the virus is likely to mutate. Wendy in Nevada wants to know about that.
Does the coronavirus that causes COVID-19 mutate like the flu virus? If so, could the COVID-19 vaccine in development now be ineffective next year?
Do scientists have a good answer to this question?
So far, it looks like it does not mutate like the flu virus does. It looks like it stays relatively stable, and there are little teeny mutations, but they aren't ones that change immunity or that would change the efficacy of a vaccine. That said, we are only 5 months now into this epidemic, right?
Yeah.
And so we're still watching. It may change. But as of right now, it seems pretty stable, which is good news.
That is good news. Okay, this next question is about the arc of the disease, and it comes from Gail in Wisconsin.
I would like to understand more about the stages of the disease's progression. What are the survival rates for each stage? How is critical defined? When does it become clear if someone in critical condition will survive or not?
Dr. Ranney, walk us through this from infection to conclusion. What have doctors learned about the way this disease runs its course?
Do you have an hour, Ari?
No. We're going to blow through all the other segments. Take the rest of the hour to answer this one question. No.
Oh, seriously though. So we've learned a lot, but there's still a lot we don't know. We know that when people get infected, most people get symptoms within about 14 days. Some don't ever get symptoms. of those who do get sick, who get a cough and a fever and all those other symptoms that we're looking out for, a small portion of them progress to get sicker, to get pneumonias, or to get some of the other related syndromes that we're noticing from COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Of those, a portion need to be hospitalized. And of those, a portion get really, really sick and have to be in the intensive care unit, get critically ill. The survival rates at each stage depend on so many factors. They depend on what pre-existing conditions you have. They depend on ways that we're still trying to figure out about how the virus affects your blood and your oxygen level, your lungs, your brain, your kidneys. There are folks that are starting to create scores to help us predict survival and to predict the need for hospitalization, but that's an area that we're still doing a lot of research on. The big takeaway is that it takes about 2 weeks from when you get infected to get symptoms, and then it's usually another 1 to 2 weeks after that before people get sick enough for hospitalization. Hmm. But we're finding that some people keep having symptoms for like a month or a month and a half, 2 months, which is crazy and is unusual.
We've talked to some of those people on this program about the really long road to recovery. I'm struck by the fact that when we started this program, people were being told not to wear masks in public, and that's one of the big things that has changed. Our next question about masks is from Jared in Salt Lake City.
My question is regarding the cloth face masks that are so popular these days. It's my understanding that the cloth face masks really don't do a whole lot as far as stopping viruses from entering or leaving your body. Are they really that helpful?
Dr. Rani, what's the latest research show on masks?
So this is a place where scientists will say a mea culpa. We did say early on, don't bother to wear masks, but then we started to get some data that those cloth masks may actually make a difference. And the ones that make a difference are the ones that are made with more than one layer of fabric. So if you use two layers, they're more effective. And then there are certain types of fabric that seem to be more effective than others. A tighter weave of cotton or silk both seem to be more effective. And there are some good studies out. They're certainly not as good as those surgical masks that we wear in the hospital setting. But of course, as you know, we still have shortages of protective equipment for frontline healthcare workers. So for now, the data is that wearing those good cloth masks decreases transmission to other people and also likely protects you from getting infected if you're in close contact with a person who's sick. But the best protection, of course, is still that physical distancing.
Dr. Megan Rani of Brown University, thank you so much for answering all of these questions for us tonight. It's been great having you on the program.
Thank you, Ari. Thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it on behalf of our country.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, this week, later this week on the National Conversation, some churches, mosques, and synagogues are reopening. What are the decisions that you're making when it comes to safely practicing your faith? Go to npr.org/nationalconversation. On Twitter, use the hashtag NPRConversation, or you can call and leave us a message at 202-403-0386. Once again, that number is 202-403-0386. Coming up later in the hour, what are the silver linings of this pandemic experience we've all been living through? Stay with us. This is The National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.